Go ahead.
Hello and welcome to Amigo Radio 6.5 live from social distancing. Do you ever just look at a thing in your house and it's like, how did the children gouge a hole in it that large?
Sure. Sure. The stains are even weirder. The gouging of the holes, I understand, because they take something and whack the wall with it to let us know that they need our attention at 3 a.m.
3 a.m.?
Yeah, that happened last night.
That's late. Yeah. I'm Ryan Cook, by the way, I should say that.
I'm Seth Fisher. I think people know us now that they can see us on this one, at least.
No, it's just part of the ritual. Now you can sponsors.
Sponsors, that's also the part of the ritual. In fact, the sponsors are Underground Printing and the Bow Store. And Underground Printing has a Friday deal going on right now. If you look on the website,
I'll tell you what.
I got a great code for you.
A little bit about them.
Yeah, UGP.io/shopmichigan. They have a 30% off Black Friday sale going on right now. There you go.
All right. Do we have other sponsors?
We have great associate sponsors, including Ann Arbor Elder Law, who's going to be on here today with us, Homeshore Lending, Human Element, Information Entropy, Michigan Law Grad, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, residents in Ann Arbor Downtown, University of Michigan Alumni Association. And music this week is by Emily Scott Robinson, who's my former camper.
All right. So usually we talk about last look back at the previous game, and since I did these UFRs, you're right, we're going to do it! A 42-48 victory in triple overtime over Rutgers. Of course, the big story everybody wants to talk about is Cade McNamara.
Right.
And
right.
How he's the savior of the program. Milton, I thought, deserved to get pulled because he missed Ronnie Bell on what would have been a 40-yard play, and then the subsequent drive, he missed a couple guys and just seemed off. So I understand why they pulled him, and McNamara came in, and they scored a lot of points. And it's hard to balance out how many of those were McNamara improving over Milton and how much of it was the fact that Michigan had a ground game and how much of that ground game was related to McNamara throwing not one, but three different RPOs when Rutgers came hard off the corner.
And you have a theory about
now,
this.
I look at...
Right?
Well, I mean, it does help because, his first pass, they run power on the first play. Mm-hmm. His first pass is an RPO where he watches a trap corner come hell for leather after the run game, and he just flicks it over his head, and it's a 14-yard completion on a zero-yard pass. Now, I think that Joe Milton can probably do this, but since they've all but refused to even try this with him, I kind of feel like maybe he can't do it. And the reason that there were six screens, four RPOs, and three zone reads when McNamara was on the field, and 0, 0, and 0 of those when Milton was on the field is the fact that he can't read stuff out. He can't make post-snap reads. They don't trust him to do it yet. And, you know, you've kind of come to an impasse when this is the guy who was your clear starter. You lost Dylan McCaffrey, who had displayed an almost uncanny ability to make those reads in a fairly significant amount of time the past couple of years. And now you're going to your third string quarterback who may or may not work out. We're obviously going to get to see him start against Penn State, mm-hmm. but from a program perspective, doesn't really give you a whole lot of confidence, even if McNamara did look fairly good.
Yeah. I mean, the reason why everyone's feeling the way we're feeling is not just because McNamara came in and was competent at the beginning, but like the second time in a row he came in and immediately threw a touchdown that, okay, wide open guy, but Joe Milton has missed wide open guys. And, you know, there's the airy-fairy, the feelings, the stuff that you can't tell until you UFR, all felt, oh my God, we actually have some confidence, maybe we can go run our stuff. And it makes sense that, like, if you dig down, it's that they're actually making reads and making things easy on themselves. But if you're not making those reads, you're making things incredibly difficult. And if you're judging them on the... I don't see how you can see one of these quarterbacks and playing that way in practice and say, this guy can't make his reads, so we're going to make everything hard, and not just go with the other guy.
Yeah, it is a puzzler. And, I mean, this is a coaching staff that looked at this set of cornerbacks and said, we can run press man with them too, right? So there were a lot of decisions during this 3-month off season, like fall camp, that just don't look like they make any sense from the perspective of we're 5 games deep into this season. But more specifically about McNamara, one thing that I think has to be said is that he did have support from a ground game, and that was partially his ability to throw some RPOs. But also Michigan came out, they added a couple of tight ends to the line, they used Bell as an insert ISO lead blocker, which was interesting. And you saw Hassan Haskins make some chicken salad mm-hmm. out of Michigan's blocking. And by the time they got to overtime, you know, they were in like 2nd and 18 and 3rd and 18, and they threw it a couple times. But other than that, the only throw McNamara had in overtime was a waggle where the prevalence of the run game got the intermediate guy open. He hit him, and it was a nice throw. But they weren't leaning on him like Michigan was leaning on Milton in the Indiana and Michigan State games.
Yeah,
because they didn't have to, because they had a semblance of a ground game. And that was just it's probably pretty frustrating to Milton personally to be sitting on the sidelines and be like, all right, now you're putting them in 2nd and 1. Thanks. Right. Great timing, guys.
Yeah, and part of that, go ahead.
If you go back and you look at it in detail, it's not all McNamara having a different aspect to the offense, because really they only ran a few zone reads with him and he got 2 of the 3 wrong. So like he had a give when he should have kept, he had a keep when he should have given, and then he had the touchdown.
And one was so terrible. One was just like, you know, Shea Patterson running into space with an arc blocker, and yeah.
Yeah, one was like, how do you not keep that? That's mm-hmm. 20 yards at least. So it's not like he's perfect on these things, but they're allowing him to try. And they just didn't do that with Milton. It feels like the worst case scenario if you're running zone read with Joe Milton is the same thing that's happening to your ground game already, where they're ignoring Joe Milton and he doesn't have the ball. Well, that's the worst case of a zone read. It's the same thing you're already doing.
Right.
And maybe he gets it right, and maybe he busts it open for a big chunk yard. So there's really no justification for the way they play Joe Milton. There's no justification for the fact that the Gattis offense, which is supposedly based on pre- and post-snap reads, didn't look at all like a Gattis offense until McNamara came in. But since we're in the spot we are in, then I guess this is the way forward.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that I noticed was I thought that they were running an offense in the second half that acknowledges what Rutgers does, right? Remember, like they like to loop around that defensive end and, you know, and shoot their defensive tackles into the backfield. And what that does is if you have a defensive tackle in the backfield that quick, it's really hard to pull because he's just going to cut off the puller, and that's why they can do that. If you can extend the line, or if you can read a guy in order to slow that down, or spread out your line, there's all sorts of tricks that teams have shown against Rutgers, and Michigan used all of them. They brought out they spread their line, the same thing that Ohio State did against them, where now that defensive tackle wants to go somewhere, he's just going upfield and he's going to miss everybody, and he just gets escorted there by the center. Done. Or they ran a pin and pull where, you know, you commit both of your pullers to kicking out, and they already know what their assignments are because that guy's looping around. I think 1 or 2 times they had Zinter kind of not identify that guy. And I probably was just the first half. Maybe they practiced it and Zinter is just a true freshman and there's a lot in that's played right now. But it felt in the second half, especially like extending the line, extending the width of the line, all these little tricks that you do against a team like Rutgers, they did. And it sucked for Milton because they saved that stuff for the second half, but like, why are you saving that stuff in the second half? That's the response to Rutgers.
Well, in particular, there was that trap for Hassan Haskins where he gets a 20-yard run and didn't really have to break a sweat because the design of the play trapped Rutgers, and also the threatened rollout from the quarterback drew a guy. And it just feels so different when the quarterback is occupying a different player, which Michigan has utterly failed to do all year. So
yeah,
doesn't really change my opinion about what needs to be done with the coaching staff. But
yeah,
you know, I guess we're going to see how it goes the next few games. Maybe they can recover a little bit before Ohio State probably, you know, kicks their face in. But
or doesn't play. Ohio State's their head coach has COVID right now, and apparently they're just under the limit where they can't play.
Well,
Yeah.
So on the defensive side of the ball, I think there were some encouraging signs. You have to grade on a curve because the Rutgers offensive line. But I think we saw Hinton have the two most impressive plays of his career to date. He had a sack. And then on the 4th-and-9 touchdown, people don't remember this, but he ripped through the center immediately and got a ton of pressure on a 3-man rush. And because it was a 3-man rush, which Michigan started to do a little bit now, there was nobody to clean up. But I thought he had a good game. Jeter had a good game. Michigan got nothing from their ends in terms of pass rush, and that is a major problem. But Ross had a big bounce back game. He had a couple plus three plays, which is when you create a large negative play largely yourself. He had a sack. He had a stuff for 0 yards and drew a hold while making that stuff. So he really popped up. And then after McGrone goes out, Adam Shibley comes in. And Adam Shibley is fine. Like
he looks more like a scholarship player than he looks like a walk-on, right? He doesn't look like a super heady guy who's a little slow. He looks like, a 4-star who is still figuring things out.
Well, he was one of a couple different linebackers to get a -2 for covering the wrong slant.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a couple other issues too, but he had 11 plus one halves, which you just get for being a middle linebacker and scraping to the right point and being useful, which is a lot in the amount of time he was on the field. And then in the overtime session, they try to get him on a flare screen, like get him in space against Pacheco, and he just takes the guy down. So that's good range, and then that's a tough guy to bring down. So he looks like a viable player, and obviously you're going to want Cam McGrone to come back as fast as possible, but he looks like he could be a solid Big Ten linebacker, which is nice because they don't really have any scholarship guys who aren't true freshmen backing up.
Yeah, that got dire really quick.
So, and then you have Hunter Reynolds come in for Hawkins, and Reynolds does pretty well as well. So he gets Pacheco on the edge, and Pacheco stiff arms the ever-living hell out of him, and he still makes a tackle. He's holding on to Pacheco like a dog holding on to the ankle of a bear, but he gets the job done. And he was able to get over the top of a slot fade, even the completion on 4th-and-9 where it's a scramble drill with the quarterback moving up, so you have less time because the quarterback's right on the line of scrimmage. He's able to get a rake in at the ball. He doesn't actually get the ball out, but I thought that was fine coverage. He looks like he's the stereotypical heady walk-on who can get away with a relative lack of size and athleticism because he just knows where he needs to be. That slot fade was first and foremost the thing that jumped out, because when's the last time Michigan got a safety over the top of a slot fade?
Kovacs?
It's been a while. Kovacs didn't get over the top of slot fades. We love Jordan Kovacs, but that wasn't his game. So he had to cheat to it, but
yeah,
when he cheated to it, he got there. Big negative, obviously, is not going to be a surprise. It was Dax Hill, who came in with 7 positive points, but 11 negative ones. And sometimes in games like this, I wonder if my grading scale is harsh enough on giant busts. Because, like, if Michigan gives up a 15-yard play and there's nobody near, like, that's a -2, right? Like, that's like, oh, that's pretty bad. That's a -2. And if you score a 60-yard uncontested touchdown, I'm like, well, that's a -4. When really it could be 8. Well, but it just feels so wrong to give someone a -8 for one play.
I think what happened is your grading scale came up under Ryan Mundy. And that was a Mundy game. That was like he did a couple positive things.
Well,
and then once in a while he's jumping in the air trying to catch something instead of knocking it down or hitting the guy. And then we're tracking yards after Mundy. And Mundy was a very athletic player who did that a lot. And Dax Hill is a very athletic player who's done it now one time.
Once. I mean, it's not that uncommon. Like, I think Pro Football Focus's play-by-play scale is +2, -2.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's – they can't get up to +4. Like, I'm like, oh, or -4. Like, -4. That's terrible. So it's not really that uncommon to have a play-by-play grading scale that doesn't account for giant 60-yard busts.
Right.
And I always feel bad when – their grading comes out and I'm like, that's not as negative as I feel like it should be, and I think that was a major reason for why this week.
Yeah, the just throwing the ball up in the first place takes a level of risk that you've induced, I guess, you know, by taking away other options or, you know, unless they're throwing to a wide open guy, you know, Dax Hill blowing that, the defense still did enough in order to create a put him in a position where he could have made a play, and then blowing the play is, you know, it's a huge swing, but it's a huge swing either way, right? Like, you could intercept that and get a plus four.
Well, not if you don't cover it. All right, have we expunged our duty to talk about Rutgers?
I believe so.
All right.
Given the numbers of people take a break on here.
Come back and talk about anything else.
It's Black Friday today, and friend of the pod, Underground Printing, has you covered. Underground Printing is a great local business with multiple stores in Ann Arbor, including the Bose store, and they have tons of great Michigan apparel you can wear to proudly rep the maize and blue. Tackle all of your holiday gift needs with their Black Friday retail sale, and shop safely with a 30% discount on all online orders, as well as free shipping on orders of $75 or more. Visit ugp.io/shopmichigan, and make your Black Friday the easiest one ever with UGP.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Hey, so I have, like, insurance and stuff, but I don't really, like, know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance, and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also, like, I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually, like, reads MGo blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those, too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together, and you will save money on your insurance, and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
I went walking down the road with a heavy heart and miles left to go. Tell me what's the point in planting pretty things in these days of darkness and disease. The world is burning, have you not heard? And she smiled and said, honey, I've lived long enough to learn. The time for flowers will come again. Maybe in 1 year, maybe in 10. There are days despair will win, but the time for flowers will come again.
Welcome back to MGo Radio 6.5 live from social distancing. We welcome in Ace Anbender, no doubt familiar to all you people at this juncture, to talk some football. No.
Where's the button? I can kick you off this thing.
I don't think you want to do that. To talk some basketball. And he's watching hockey. He knows what's going on.
Yeah, you know, kinda.
The puck goes in the net. It's a simple game, except for icing and offsides.
It does go in the net this year.
Anyway, we're going to start with basketball. Michigan beats Bowling Green, a contender for the MAC title, and that looks a little bit better today after Ohio nearly upset Illinois. And, you know, the thing that stands out from that game, of course, is the fact that Michigan's offense, I don't want to say it looked like Xavier Simpson never left, but it looked far more polished and capable than I think anyone had a right to expect in game one of COVID year.
Yeah, you certainly don't expect, 23 assists on 33 made baskets in the opening game when you're replacing your point guard and one of the replacements is a transfer and you've got a freshman at center getting most of the minutes there. I mean, there were a lot of really, really encouraging signs out of this one. I'd say probably given the opponent, given, you know, what you can reasonably take out of one game, about it, that went about as good as you'd hope it could go, I would say, especially considering, I mean, Mike Smith seamlessly fit in as the point guard on this team. We'll see if he holds up defensively. There were some hiccups there for him, but certainly on offense, he was running the pick and roll at a very high level, darting into the paint frequently, drawing fouls, just really keeping the offense moving when it could have easily stagnated a little bit. Shondi Brown obviously pouring in 18 of his 19 points in the second half, with five of them being three-pointers, was not necessarily what we expected his primary contribution to be, but certainly was a welcome one. And he did what we kind of expected he would do in the other aspects of the game, playing really tough defense, looking very switchable on that end, and also good on the ball, pulling down some rebounds, just kind of being that sort of glue guy that you expect him to be, except the glue guy, you know, also made it rain from beyond the arc. So that was nice. And then the other headliner was Hunter Dickinson looking. I mean, Seth brought this up in our Slack chat. I had somebody else ask this before the pod, and I didn't really have a good answer for it. That was the best a Michigan center has looked in their debut since I don't remember when.
Yeah, maybe Jordan Morgan, because he redshirted. But Hunter Dickinson did not, although he is 20 at this point, so he should be a little bit farther along. What kind of leapt out about Dickinson to me is, if you watched his high school film, he looked like he had significantly reshaped his body. And sometimes the freshmen come in and they haven't been Camp Sandersoned, and it kind of shows compared to someone who's been in the program for at least a year. And Dickinson looked a lot more trim and a lot more laterally mobile than he did in high school. And he grew a pretty badass beard. So that's, I mean, we're all team beard.
Of course. I mean, yeah, I love what Dickinson showed, both in terms of just when he walked out there, he is thinner than he looked a year ago. And also, what hasn't changed is that no matter what basketball team he's on, he looks absolutely enormous next to anybody else. That dude is just a monster in the paint. So he had kind of a goofy looking bucket where he sort of pinned it against the rim on with this left hand because he didn't quite get it up high enough, and then just tapped it back in because there is nobody who can reach that high on Bowling Green. You can see he's still getting comfortable on defense. He's still learning some things on offense, but he had a fantastic assist out to Livers on a three-pointer where he, you know, skips it cross-court out of the post. And that was something that had been highlighted throughout his recruitment, was that he had really advanced passing ability for a big man. At 7'2", it's going to be hard to get in the way of his passing lanes, so that's a really nice thing if Michigan can dump the ball into him and get some offense out of whether it's the high post or low post, getting him to just operate in the middle of that offense. With the way Michigan's shooting, at least early on, you can get some really good stuff out of that. So He had a couple issues to work out on defense where he jumped for blocks that were not very feasible and then gave up offensive rebounds.
Yeah.
But that's a pretty freshman thing, and that's something that tends to get worked out during the course of a season and not just something you have to wait for an off season to fix.
Yeah, there was a lot of that from other people too, where it was a good contest from the on-ball defender and the help defense was still coming. And then sometimes when the help defense was necessary, it wasn't all there. So offense looked very put together, mid-season form. Defense kind of looked a little shaky, considering the fact that they've got a bunch of new pieces and maybe a couple guys who are going to be suboptimal defensively for the duration of the year. Doesn't really surprise, but I do think it's going to be a little bit of a cap on the season. I want to talk about my favorite bucket, though. Favorite bucket of the whole game. Can you guess what this is, Ace?
Is it the Brandon Johns rip?
No, it's not. But Brandon Johns is involved. It's the Franz Wagner post-up where he posts up. It goes across the top of the key from Dickinson to Johns, and then Johns has the instant entry pass, and then Franz gets a layup. At 6'10", he's going to have 5-6 inches on anybody he goes up against in that situation. And that's a way to generate offense that's not off the ball screen. And I think we saw from the attempts for Franz to run ball screen in this game that might not be his game yet. And we're going to have to find some other ways to create open shots. And that looked like a pretty good one.
Yeah, no, I was impressed and happy with how Juwan Howard used his kind of opened up the playbook a little bit more now that, I mean, Xavier Simpson, we all love him. This is not a bash on his game, except his shooting a little bit. But when he's your point guard, you're really kind of stuck being a very heavy ball screen offense. And specifically with, like, him being the ball handler and the primary option in terms of it just now Michigan has a totally different way where they can play. You've got multiple ball handlers. You've got multiple screeners. They did some interesting things with the double drag set that we saw a little bit last year, but they've got some more versatile options that they can use out of that now. Also with having more pick and pop guys on the floor too. And I mean, Franz Wagner, we didn't come out of this game. Like he wasn't the talk of the game because he only played 26 minutes. You know, he had that moment where it looked like he might be hurt. That was a little alarming. And thankfully, doesn't make any of his three pointers, despite some open looks, which I think dulls a little bit of the excitement. But if he hits a couple of those, then we're talking about a game where he scores an efficient 15 points in 26 minutes. Looks way bigger than he did last year. I mean, he's definitely added some good weight. I mean, I think he did the tweet out some Camp Sanderson side-by-side thing, even though Camp Sanderson may have been camp hanging out with my brother.
Yeah.
But he did some work in the offseason, and that showed. So, I mean, the possibility with a 6'10 dude that skilled, I think we only saw kind of the tip of the iceberg in game one. I'm still very excited about what he's going to do this season.
Yeah, my favorite quote from the aftermath of this game was Mike Smith saying, "I was so open." I feel like Jonte Brown also felt the same way. Both of them just look like every time they touch the ball, they're like, "This is amazing. This is amazing. I'm on a team of people who can do basketball. And I got an open look from three."
Yeah, I mean, those two guys combined to go 4-for-10 on three-pointers. They were pretty much all screamingly wide open. Smith was, I'm sure, getting wider. Well, I know from watching the tape, he was getting wider lanes towards the basket than he's used to. And there were some particularly easy ones when they went with the true five-out with either Brandon Johns or Terrence Williams at center. Those groups, especially with Williams, had their defensive issues, but are definitely intriguing offensively. Johns, unfortunately, kind of ran into foul trouble right as they were going to him at center, which got Williams in there at the five, I would guess a little bit earlier than they were planning to do so. It kind of seemed like Juwan Howard had a rotation script for this game, and foul trouble kind of messed that up, but he still wanted to play small.
That was what a freshman big looks like.
Terrence Williams getting in that quickly.
That was what a freshman big looks like. That is like Terrence Williams getting in there. He got a little confused on a couple of the rotations, and that was what I expected out of a freshman big.
Well, he's not a big, right? He's a 6'6" power forward. It's
he's 6'7".
He's got some Jayshon Tate to him, so.
Yeah, but at the same time, that like there's going small ball, and then there's like that, and I feel like that is it's going to be tough for that ever to be viable. Yet, let alone when he's a true freshman. But he had an offensive rebound and putback, which I think is going to be his best game. Missed an open three, had a couple of let's say over ambitious moments on the dribble. You know, a guy who, when Michigan is at his best, when he's on the floor, is going to be the fourth offensive option. And it's going to chip in ways like offensive rebounding, playing good defense, getting after the boards on the defensive glass, maybe creating a few possessions with turnovers and stuff like that. But I don't really see him as a viable center long term. I was a little surprised to see him in there.
I mean, I think he could eventually be a small ball five, but this year with Brandon Johns there, I'm would prefer probably not seeing that. I do think it's also notable that put back came when he slid back to the four.
Yeah. Isaiah Livers looks pretty much like Isaiah Livers, which is a very good thing. He did snake a pick and roll for a kick out to Smith. But later in the game, he got hounded into a turnover when he got a little bit overambitious with his dribble. Kind of feel like, you know, he might be able to do some pick and roll stuff from time to time, but his wheelhouse is still going to be his wheelhouse.
Yeah, I mean, he is still primarily a catch-and-shoot guy, but when you go 3-for-8 on catch-and-shoots and make it look as easy as he does, that's just fine. I mean, he scores what seems like a real easy 17 points, was really active on the glass. He had 8 defensive rebounds in this game, had a steal. I mean, one thing about this team is just between Brown and Livers and Wagner, and then especially when you combine that with either the activity of Johns or the size of Dickinson, they're just so active and long on defense that, I mean, you could tell it was giving Bowling Green a lot of problems, and, you know, obviously that's a MAC team, so you don't want to read too much into it, but I just think I mean, teams are going to have some serious issues with Michigan's size because they just looked so disruptive and so hard to finish over when they had their kind of go-to lineups in.
Yeah, one of the things that's the most encouraging is that 100% of the minutes at the 3 and 4, with some scattered exceptions here and there, are going to be Chaundy Brown, Isaiah Livers, or Franz Wagner. And all those lineups seem pretty good, and then you're probably going to kick someone down to the 2 for, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes a game.
Yeah, because you left Brandon Johns out in the cold there, unless you're putting all his minutes at the 5.
I am. I mean.
I wouldn't give up on him this early. He had a great, rip through and layup on a set, and I think he's going to prove useful both the 4 and the 5 still.
Yeah, I forgot about Johns a little bit, but 100% of the minutes at those places are guys who I think are established good Big Ten players. And it's a big change from last year when, you know, Livers goes out and you're like, who's our 7th guy? And that doesn't seem to be the case this year. So depth everywhere except I would say probably the 2 guard is excellent.
And I think they can cover for the 2 guard a little bit with either Eli Brooks against a smaller team or Franz Wagner, Chaundy Brown really on defense. He's 6'5". Like that's a 2 guard size person who just happens to be a pretty hefty 2 guard. Yeah. But I don't see that as a negative, given it doesn't seem to be affecting his lateral agility much at all. He looks like he's going to be a truly excellent defender. And this team, I mean, they easily go 8 deep with Brown, Dickinson, and Johns coming off the bench, at least for now. Williams was that 9th man, and then you got Zeb Jackson looking a little in over his head on defense in a few minutes out there. But, you know, point guard first game going against a guy in Justin Turner, who was a very sought after transfer who did not transfer, stuck with Bowling Green and definitely looked like a guy who could have been playing high major ball this year.
Yeah.
And given that he looked that good, the fact that Michigan at least forced him to take a high volume of shots to get to his 24 points, you know, it didn't look great on defense at times, but I'm still, I wasn't super discouraged by the defense. The number, I mean, Bowling Green shot 34% from two.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up because it did feel bad. It felt like there were a lot of straight line drives to the basket. It felt like there wasn't a lot of rim protection. And then you go look at the numbers and it's like, they were awful from two.
Yeah. Now, some of that I think is that Turner was not a particularly good finisher last year, even in the MAC. Mm-hmm. So Michigan definitely on a couple buckets got fortunate that their poor rim protection didn't lead to a layup. But at the same time, they've got part of that is just when you have a 7'2" guy in there, even when he's not doing the best job of physically getting his hand in front of the ball, you still affect shots just by being that big and players being afraid of getting down there. And then, I mean,
and Franz too.
You had, yeah, and then you had Trey Diggs go off for going 6-for-10 from three, and that was just annoying because I didn't think Michigan was doing a particularly poor job of defending the perimeter. That dude just caught fire in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that does kind of stick out as an issue defensively is you have all this length. You have a couple of really good defenders, and you're playing a MAC team, and they turn it over six times. And that was kind of a trend last year, too, where Michigan was just not a defense that generated a lot of turnovers.
Yeah, they were a little passive. It did seem like they were a lot more focused on making sure guys did not get into the paint as opposed to or making sure that they were walled up in front of guys who got into the paint as opposed to knocking the ball away before they got there. I don't totally mind it. I would like to see with their length, you know, at least trying to jump a few more passing lanes in there. We saw Livers do it and get the game's like biggest highlight play out of it on an alley-oop. But this was also a team that had the ball in one guy's hands so much that the opportunities for turnovers were mostly going to be either out of Justin Turner screwing up, which he just didn't really do in large part because he wasn't really passing the ball, or getting handsier than you kind of want your guys to do necessarily. So hopefully it's a one game trend. Although, as you said, this was something that also dates back to last year. But I do expect this team to force more than I think if they had an 8% turnover rate forced in this one. It's gonna get up a little higher than that at least.
And the other thing that kind of leapt out in contrast to last year was Michigan hit 77% of their free throws. And again, we love Xavier Simpson, but having a point guard who goes 7 of 8 from the line, that feels nice. And Hunter Dickinson also projects as a guy who's going to be significantly above average for a center at knocking down free throws. I think he was over 70%. In high school his final year. So, you know, Michigan has been a very bad free throw team for about the past 4 years. And it doesn't feel like that's going to continue.
No, I mean, when you get that level of upgrade at point guard and center from your free throw shooting compared to what it's been, that's going to move the needle a lot. Also, Michigan has generally tended to have like one wing or two wings who are surprisingly poor free throw shooters. But Brown is a guy whose career near 85%. Livers almost didn't miss last year, literally went the entire Big Ten season without missing a free throw. I mean, Franz Wagner has been the worst free throw shooter on this team, and we expect him to be a pretty darn good free throw shooter under most circumstances. So, this is a team that both did a good job of getting to the line in this game, which was nice to see. They were attacking the basket. I mean, obviously Dickinson's going to get there just because he's such a load in the paint that he is going to draw fouls. Smith can kind of fling himself at the basket and draw them from sort of the comical impact that gets made when a 5'11 dude goes hard at the hoop. There's going to be ways that this team didn't have before to efficiently score. And I mean, that did affect previous Michigan offenses, that free throws, particularly off of Michigan's main play, you know, the 1-5 pick and roll, were not really an ideal outcome.
And end games.
Got any hockey takes?
I mean, they look real good. They keep the puck sticks, you know. They move the puck really well. Owen Power looks enormous. Kent Johnson is very skilled. That overtime winner was a thing of beauty.
That was Bordalo.
Yeah. I was getting to it.
All right, sorry.
Thomas Bordalo. I even know his first name.
All right, there you
go. And that it is spelled not with an X, because I had to double-check that before tweeting about it. I was going for the...
Oh, at the very end, I was like, what is this?
Yeah, I was going for the full-blown LSU spelling there and went a little too far.
He's from Quebec, so that's a totally different ballgame.
Yeah, but no, they look great.
So they played tonight against Notre Dame. Notre Dame got swept by Wisconsin in their opening weekend. And then Wisconsin went out and they swept Penn State in one of the strangest series you'll ever see. Where I think Penn State outshot them like something like 46-16 on Friday, and they lost 6-3. And then they lost the next night 7-3. So whatever Penn State's doing, and they always just throw pucks at the net. Their like whole goal as a program is to break Corsi. they're having some struggles, and the Wisconsin team that Michigan took 5 points from last week and does look like it is one of the better ones in the Big Ten. So for football fans, the threat of a Minnesota happening seems lower today than it did a couple days ago.
Penn State has some atrocious goaltending, by the way.
Well, yeah, that's that's the implication from 13 goals on some 30s shots and change. So Notre Dame will be a tough-checking opponent. They're always very disciplined. You know, they don't really have a whole lot of scoring this year, which has been a problem for them for the past couple years. But, you know, this might be similar to the Wisconsin series where Michigan is in a tight game for 30 minutes. And, you know, on Friday night against Wisconsin, they were able to break it open, but it kind of took them a lot of grit and a lot of effort to finally get over the hump against the Badgers. I should point out that this year, because of the 3-on-3 overtime, an overtime win is not a full pairwise win. It's 55% of a win, which is fair, probably, because 3-on-3 hockey is not real hockey.
It's pretty fun hockey.
It is, but the stakes are appropriate. It's like, oh, I hope we win this. But I'm also not going to – and the pairwise isn't even going to work this year because Michigan – the entire Big Ten isn't playing the rest of college hockey in any way whatsoever. So I have no idea what they're going to do. But for future reference, 3-on-3 hockey –
not counting arcade hockey as real hockey.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be the heart attack that it is. But for conference standing purposes, it's still pretty important. All right, Ace, thank you. We'll talk to you on Sunday, I'm sure.
Yeah, most likely after a or before a pretty thorough blowout of Oakland.
You don't want to sit around and preview that at all.
All right, let's take a break, come back, and hopefully talk to Reed McCarthy.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Win or lose this season, stop into Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the Big House and accessible to ages 21+, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
Yesterday, I drove past the house we used to live in. When you were waiting tables, I was working 9 to 5. Do you remember all the snow we got that winter? Your car could barely make it up the drive. We had to skimp.
Welcome back to Epico Radio 6.5 Live from Social Distancing. Now is the time on Sprockets when we talk about Penn State. The Nittany Lions are 0-5.
But a very good 0-5.
They are 0-5. They've outgained two of their opponents by over 200 yards, but they are 0-5. They're switching quarterbacks willy-nilly. Their ground game has fallen off a cliff. Their defense is less than the sum of its parts. Mm-hmm. If this game isn't Spider-Man pointing, I don't know which game is.
Yeah, and they fortunately didn't put it on at night, so everyone in the country can't tune in and watch because you know that they want to.
Oh, it's on ABC, though. Oh. This is the combined record of these teams is 2-8, and it's on ABC.
Well, both teams, their last win over an FBS team was Rutgers. Although for Penn, a Power 5 team. Penn State had a win in their bowl game against Memphis. But their last Power 5 win was Rutgers.
Well, I guess we should talk about the Nittany Lions. You know, sometimes I'm looking at the stats, and then I come over to your FIFO film, and the grades don't really match the expectations I got from the stats. And I think there's a couple points on this team where that's the case, and that one is the offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
You thought they were pretty good run blockers, but if you look at their results, I mean, they haven't really been able to run the ball on anyone except Nebraska, although that is the game you did.
Yeah, right. So I was trying to use a team most like Michigan, and Nebraska has a...
That's accurate, but very mean, Seth.
Hey, Nebraska's on a winning streak right now. They're killing it. But yeah, their left tackle is pretty good. We've known about that guy for a while, and the other guys. I mean, they've always been kind of luggish, big run blockers. They moved Will Freeze back inside, and like that guy is much better as a guard. And you know, you could see it. He leans on people, and they go places. Rasheed Walker is the left tackle. Do you remember Michigan? Yeah, of course you remember Michigan, 2013-14. That's what it is. It's like that one guy misses an assignment and everybody else did a good job. And so, like, you know, Michael Manet will get a +2 on that play, but Michael Miranda screwed up something and somebody got in and stuffed it. And it's been a cavalcade of that. I don't think they're well coached.
It also seems like even though the three guys they've got taking carries are all 4-star backs, that, like, you know, you recruit 4-star backs and then you have a pecking order, and when you get down to a third in that pecking order, you're going to lose a lot. With Journey Brown and Noah Kane out, they've lost a lot.
And I think Devin Ford went out of the last game. Now, he's supposed to play this one, but, you know, I think that he might be a little banged up as well, which would lead them down to their true freshman. None of them look bad. They all just look like running backs. They are not good pass blockers, and that's a very nice way of saying it. I mean, a lot of the times it's just the protection, but like there are a lot of plays where just a linebacker screaming off the edge gets a free sack, and the running back is just kind of sitting there. And when they do have opportunities to block, they don't block. I don't think I got a single blocking plus on any of them.
That'll happen with young backs in particular. Their wide receiver core is fairly depleted, especially now that Pat Freiermuth is out for the season. Mm-hmm. Jahan Dotson is pretty good. Then they've got a freshman slot receiver who's getting a lot of catches underneath but is erratic, has dropped a lot of balls, has missed some opportunities for yards after the catch. And then they just have a parade of guys who are popping up with maybe one catch a game. Mm-hmm. So, and I looked at this team, and especially post-Freiermuth, it seemed like there was a pretty decent formula for Michigan, which was bracket Dotson, stick Hill on the freshman slot guy, and then just live with everybody else.
Yeah, and vice versa. They're going to put Dotson in the slot just as often as they will Parker Washington, who's the true freshman slot slash outside guy. They're just going to rotate those guys around, and it's mostly just to make sure you can't just stick somebody on Dotson, which you will do anyway, right? Either way, they're going to take care of him. Losing Freiermuth is huge, I think, for them. He is really kind of the guy that they look to. Both quarterbacks kind of knew where he was every play. They drew up things to get him one-on-one matchups, and that changes how you had to play defense because that guy could outrun anybody that you put on him. And I don't even know who the quarterback's going to be, but whoever it is really going to miss him more than, I think, you know, five running backs that they could lose.
Yeah, and they do have a couple of guys who are backups there who might be able to fill in decently well. Where Freiermuth was tracking towards the upper end of the NFL draft, so it's a big loss.
Yeah, yeah. I was ready to put a shield on him at the beginning of the year and, you know, put him the number one tight end in the Big Ten. They do have another tight end who I thought was pretty good, and the one who's going to start, Brenton Strange. Not a really receiving threat, but he can block, and you know, when he was in there next to Rashid Walker, they were really left heavy when they ran, but you know, it was functional. They could get out there on him.
And then, of course, the quarterback question. They've been plagued with turnovers all year. They've been flipping between Will Levis and I forgot his name.
Sean Clifford.
Sean Clifford, thank you. They've been flipping between those guys.
I mean, you can forget their names because they're going to ruin them eventually anyway, right?
Well, I mean, they've already given up 20 sacks this year, and that is a huge number in five games. So if Quiddy Pay is back for Michigan, I can see this going pretty well. But, you know, we just got through a game against Rutgers where they got absolutely nothing from their defensive ends and pass protection. So, I mean, pass rush. So this is, like, not a game where I think Michigan can win if they don't get payback or at least one of the tackles. Because that's another thing where, you know, Michigan might be starting a true freshman against a defensive line that's all four stars, has a couple of, like, dudes.
Yeah.
The swing between not having one particular player and having him is even larger than it is would be in most games.
Yeah, I would go one step further and say, either way, move Honigford to left tackle or to right tackle and play him. He seemed to be pretty with it in the last game, too. And, you know, having a true freshman against P.J. Mustafa is just, it's not going to work. Zinter is as good as you're going to get with a true freshman, and it's just not going to – it's not working right now. But, yeah, if they can move Stuber inside and get Barnhart back or get Hayes back, that really does – or, sorry, get not Barnhart, Mayfield back. That really changes the outlook in this game. Shaka Toney is – you know, he's going to get his. And Jason Awe, he's like Uche. And, you know, you remember Uche was not, he is the kind of player he is. He's going to pass rush and he's going to be really good at it. If you're leaving him against the run all the time, he's going to get a little taken advantage of. And then the defensive tackles just rush up field and leave their linebackers in the dust. And I thought that was probably a reaction to the fact that they had the best linebacker in the country at the beginning of the season when they designed this defense, and then losing him and asking, you know, Jesse Lakita and Ellis Brooks to handle that, they're not quite at the same caliber of player to be taking on blocks every single time. Sometimes they do it. Sometimes they have great plays. But there were a lot of, you know, they're buried by a free-releasing offensive lineman plays in that game.
Yeah, their results on the ground aren't particularly good, even if you disregard the Ohio State game. They nuked Indiana's rush offense. But Iowa's two main backs averaged 5.1 yards a carry. Maryland averaged 4.2 yards a carry once you get rid of sacks. And the other game they played, they was another 5.0 yards per carry.
Ohio State?
A middling Big Ten team. No, not Ohio State. It was a team that was a middling Big Ten team, so not Ohio State. So their results don't really match up with the kind of talent they have, because they're allowing, you know, the broad middle of the Big Ten to rack up pretty good numbers against them.
Yeah.
So I don't know exactly how that's come about. How has that come about? All right, Nebraska. Nebraska ran for a bunch of yards on them.
Yeah, that was Nebraska. Well, Frost does frosty things, right? He's going to get outside on them. He's going to have a couple. He reverse course a lot, and the linebackers, especially because they have free-releasing linemen on them all the time, that was, I thought, really effective. And, you know, if Josh Gattis wants to get his speed and space on, this is a good game for that. Not necessarily with the screen game, but with, you know, just kind of driving those linebackers both in both directions, because there's a lot on their plate already. And if you add, you know, offensive linemen free releasing onto them, and then they don't know which side of that guy to be on, and they have to be on one of the sides, that's where you edge them. The other thing they did is they just ran with Luke McCaffrey, and he just outraced those linebackers to the edge. And they got a couple really big runs just on him, you know, simple bash plays or something that just get him outside and got him on the edge.
And then their secondary has been missing Tariq Castro Fields for the past 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. He's reportedly day-to-day, may return. They did very well against Indiana. But if you watch that game, it was largely Michael Penix missing open guys. They did well against Nebraska, but they did well against Iowa. But mm-hmm. they've had some kind of clunkers in there. So I don't know how good the secondary stacks up. They're starting a JUCO transfer at safety, right?
Yeah, well, so their safety, they kind of rotate them all. Lamont Wade is legit. That's like the little safety who's, you know, just always in the right place. The other guy they're starting is Jaquan Brisker, who's a JUCO safety. He was a pretty high recruit, I think, originally. I got to pull it up again, but I think he was just on the edge of the top 250 originally and only fell because it looked like he was going to have to take the JUCO route. So he is an athlete, and you can tell he's an athlete. But they do a lot of sitting back and letting. I think that Penn State's defense was designed not to have the safeties too involved in the run game. They just wanted them to kind of sit back and take away long passes and let them, you know, let them protect that, because they're very soft on things. The other thing, it's hard to, like, you know, say this with any confidence, but they don't care. It's an 0-5 team. They're getting beat by all these teams that they shouldn't get beat by. They came to Penn State as high 4 stars and thought they were going to be, you know, going to Big Ten championship games. And, you know, Michigan's got the same kind of thing going on right now. It's hard to get up every single play.
All right. So their specialists are kind of run-of-the-mill.
Yeah,
they don't have outrageous New Jersey names.
They got the short kicker and the long kicker, who's also the punter. And the long kicker has, like, a big leg, but, like, he only tries punts, or he only tries kicks over 50 yards. But because it's James Franklin, they've taken a lot of those.
So they made 13 of 50 in between them last year, but they're only 5 of 10 this year, so we got a college kicker situation going on.
Mm-hmm.
So could be yips either way when the field goal team comes out. You got a prediction?
Penn State 23-20.
Yeah. Does that change if Quiddy Pay is available?
Oh, of course. I mean, Michigan, either one of these teams gets, like, one of their stars back, it could change, you know, things dramatically. Like, if they have, we just lost Giles Jackson, but, you know, if they have Tariq Castro Fields, that, like, changes their defense, right? And if we have Quiddy Pay, that changes our, if we have Jalen Mayfield, now we have an answer to the fact that they have a great defensive end. Like, That's been the problem with these teams all year, is that they're missing the stars that they kind of built their teams around.
All right, well, we're going to take one more break, come back. with a gimmicky top five that I cannot fully participate in, but will try to anyway.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
It's Black Friday today, and friend of the pod, Underground Printing, has you covered. Underground Printing is a great local business with multiple stores in Ann Arbor, including the Bow store, and they have tons of great Michigan apparel you can wear to proudly rep the maize and blue. Tackle all of your holiday gift needs with their Black Friday retail sale, and shop safely with a 30% discount on all online orders, as well as free shipping on orders of $75 or more. Visit ugp.io/shopmichigan, and make your Black Friday the easiest one ever with UGP. If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Packed a suitcase, sold the rest.
Welcome in Reed McCarthy of Ann Arbor Elder Law .com. Are you a .com? I just say .com after everything now.
No, but a couple years ago, you told me I didn't have to say www when I plugged my website. So maybe I don't have to say .com anymore. But yeah, that's my website.
All right. Reed is here for a gimmicky top five. What exactly is the prompt here? I have not successfully fulfilled it, whatever it is, but
it was recommended media to watch during quarantine.
All right.
Because we've all been trapped in and having to watch things instead of having interpersonal relationships.
I can't, in good conscience, recommend a number of the things I have watched during quarantine, but I'm going to talk about them anyway. Is that acceptable?
Fair enough.
All right. Seth, you're number five.
Plex. Plex is a streaming service. Plex. Yeah, a streaming service that uses your own computer as its server. So, you know, we're all home. We all have lots of DVDs around the house. If you can do it while you're working. You just digitize your DVDs and stick them on your own computer. And then anywhere you are, you can watch anything that you own. And they also have a streaming service. And we put the kids' videos on there. So, like, you know, my mom can get on and watch, like, you know, videos of the kids back to back to back, anything like that. I paid $100 to, like, have a lifetime membership because, you know, they're new. They want to get people signed up and they want to get people talking about them. And it works perfectly. Perfectly. I can watch any of my old DVDs. Yeah.
All right. Reed, you're number five.
I just got a notice that your bandwidth was low there, so you might want to see Frank Thomas, and I think he's selling something to help with that. Sorry, bad joke. My number five is Alone. It's a History Channel show. It is about people who go live in the wilderness by themselves with a camera, and they film themselves. It's amazing. There's no host. It's just people out in the woods going crazy and starving for 2 months.
Did you like the lady who was like, sell five
months? What's that?
So this is like Naked and Afraid, except it's cold?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And they're by themselves, and they can take 10 items with them. A dude killed a Wolverine with his bare hands.
What?
Oh, yeah.
That can't be legal. That can't be legal.
He killed a Wolverine with a hatchet or something. It was pretty awesome.
I'm not saying that it's like the weapon makes it legal. No, anyway, that's an endangered species.
It was in his food, so he killed it. He wrestled it and killed it.
He wrestled a Wolverine?
I know. It's pretty hardcore. He killed a moose with a bow and arrow, too. I mean, there's some stuff.
I mean, that's pretty cool. I do that all the time.
I know. But Alone, History Channel, there's 6 seasons or 7 seasons of it. They get progressively better. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, my wife and I are obsessed with it. Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
My number 5 is not all the Netflix shows that get canceled after 2 seasons. Because you start watching a thing, and then you don't get to finish the thing. I know this happened with GLOW, and there's a good reason. It's because you can't film a wrestling show in a pandemic. Okay. But I had a recommendation from a friend to watch The OA, which is this weird show about like near-death experiences and like alternate universes. It's crunchy. It's very difficult to wrap your head around. And then you get to the end of season 2 and they set up season 3, and then it's just like there's no more of this. So I don't want to like get into Netflix shows until I know that they're complete. And I feel that Netflix should just suck it up and complete some of these shows, because it makes me not want to consume their content, because I have no idea at what point I will have coitus interruptus. That's my take.
It's more about volume and production with Netflix, I think. Just shoot as much out there as possible.
Seth, you're number 4.
The Atlantic's Science Stories. This is media. We counted everything. So. Ed Yong specifically, he was amazing long before he was like the one guy you need to read for COVID. If you go back through his old stuff, there's the Hagfish Slime one, there's the one about baby coots, there's the one where they put 3D glasses on cuttlefish, and my favorite is the one where they like put human voices all around like the world's like biggest predators and realize that these predators are like terrified of us. Like, they changed the entire ecosystem because, like, lions are like, nope, humans, I'm out. Not dealing with that. Go on.
Reed, you're number 4.
Podcast, I like Doughboys. It's 2 kind of actors out in L.A. that just go and talk about fast food. And it's mindless and easy and fun. And they eat fast food, and they have comedians on, and they review it. And it's a great podcast.
All right. My number 4 is the one thing on this list that I will recommend without reservation, and that is The Good Place, which is the Michael Schur sitcom about the afterlife, in which you find out that Michael Schur has taken a lot of philosophy classes and would like you to know about philosophy, and somehow they kind of pull it off. So it's the kind of the rare sitcom where there's a 30-minute episode, and at the end of the episode you're moving along a storyline, so it's much more serialized than a lot of other 30-minute shows, and deeply funny, deeply human, and also there are frickin' demons, which I dig. Seth, you're number 3.
I wrote down Doughboys because I'm looking for a new podcast, but I gotta throw out the British History podcast, which is not nearly as dry as it sounds. This is not
yes,
one.
Yes, it is.
No, you haven't yes, listened to this one.
Yes, it is. I once got in a car with this man, and he was listening to a podcast.
That one I had not listened to before.
Of English letters. He was listening to an orthography podcast. And he was like, all right, on this episode, we're going to talk about the letter N. And I'm like, is this Sesame Street? No, because Sesame Street is kind of interesting.
That one I hadn't before. That one I haven't previewed here. British History Podcast is amazing, and this is what I hope, like, every time I start another podcast, I hope it's going to be the same thing, because he gets really into, like, the characters of everybody. Like, right now, they're on the very end of the Anglo-Saxons, and Emma, who is, like, the worst mother in all of history. Anyway, highly recommend that one. I also been listening to the one about 2 guys who played Dungeons & Dragons with their dad, which is great.
Can I have a clarification? Yeah. Is Emma the worst mother in history because she doesn't care about her children? Or is she the worst mother in history because she like has a lot of knives and rides a chopper?
Oh, yeah. She is... Yeah, she's the woman that Cersei Lannister was based off of, except for she doesn't like her children. She hates them and keeps on trying to plot ways to get them killed, or like tries to convince them to become king of something to get them killed.
There's a video game about this called Crusader Kings.
Yes. You'll be unsurprised to learn that this podcaster really likes that show. yeah. British History Podcast.
Reed, you're number three.
So I'm going to say South Park. I introduced my children to South Park at 9 and 10 years old. And there's nothing like the joy. There's no swearing. But there's nothing like the joy in a 10-year-old's eyes when he meets Mr. Hankey for the first time.
There's like a whole episode where they drop the F-bomb like 60 times.
I don't know if we've gotten that far yet.
I think you'd know.
My wife's a little fed up with it, though, so it might have to be put away.
My number three, and I want to be clear, I'm not recommending anyone watch this, but I did watch the entire run of Star Trek Voyager, which I quit when it was in its like syndication phase because there was like an episode where they went to hyperwarp, and then Catherine Janeway and then Tom Paris evolved into lizards and had babies. And then at the end of the show, they were just like, oh, we unevolved those guys. And now they're just back to normal. And I was like, this show is too stupid to continue watching. And now that I'm a parent, I was like, well, I can watch that. So that was kind of my late night half pay attention to show for a long time. And it didn't get any better, really. It just kind of kept being Voyager. And crazy things would happen. And at the end of every episode, they'd be like, nope, never mind. Didn't happen. And that goes to the finale of the show, which is Janeway traveling back in time to change some other stuff so that Voyager just gets home a lot faster. And I'm just like, this show, everybody was high writing every episode of this show. And they're like, oh my God, time travel is so amazing. I love it.
This is the second time you brought up that show on this podcast.
The exact opposite. No, I was talking about Deep Space Nine previously.
No. Last time you brought this show up you went into Deep Space Nine. And at the beginning of you talking about the show, I said, don't watch any further. You had just started watching this one. And you're like, it's terrible. I think you've like two episodes into it. I'm like, wait, stop. Stop now. Oh, yeah. You don't want to go any further.
It is terrible.
And you got like, to the end.
From the first scene, you can tell that this is much worse than all other Star Treks. Because it has Janeway like trying to pick up Tom Paris to be part of his crew. And Tom Paris is like, I don't need you corporation goons. It's just it's terrible. So don't watch it.
I keep trying to find Below Decks. And I can't figure out where it is, the Star Trek.
I think that's CBS All Access.
I don't know what that is. So.
I don't know what it is, but apparently I get it for free because I have a 24/7 subscription, but I can't figure out how to make it work.
I can't either.
I did not know
Seth,
about
you're number two.
My number two is Legend of Zelda Breath of Wild, which I got to it a few years later than everybody else, and I'm so glad I did because I needed this during COVID, where you can get out and explore. And if you want to play for 3 minutes and just find something to do, you will. And if you need to play for, 6 hours straight, there's plenty to do there, too. My daughter and I play it together. I finished my game quickly, and now we're kind of just exploring the world with her. And, every once in a while she's like, Daddy, 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 come here. I tamed a deer, and I'm riding on a deer's back. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. And that's the conversations that my daughter and I have now.
All right. Reed, you're number two.
If you haven't ever heard of the Emberverse series by S.M. Sterling, it's about apocalyptic fiction, and the world kind of ends, and no gunpowder works, and everybody has to learn to fight with swords again, which is pretty awesome. So basically, the conceit of the book is the Renaissance Festival people take over the world.
I think Reed is just trying to one up my dorkiness.
Your dorkiness. I'm the one who got medievalist. I left Bernard Cornwell
like
off of here, too.
40 books in the series.
Yes, this is... None of us are ever going to have girlfriends again, guys.
That's probably true. It would be very expensive in my case, because then I'd have to lose half my stuff.
Half our stuff, Reed. Our stuff.
Indeed.
My number two is also sort of Zelda related. It's The Binding of Isaac, which is a roguelike game where you play a small child who's been thrust in a basement and must kill all the enemies with your own tears. Don't play this if you're religious. It's sort of sacrilegious, I would say. Very much so. There are enemies like Satan and Mega Satan.
I think you need to explain to people what roguelike means. I know what that term means, and I'm guessing very few of our listeners do.
I should be clear. It's a roguelite with a T, not a roguelike with a K.
Oh, okay.
But essentially it means is that when you die, you have to start over entirely. Instead of having one of these namby-pamby save games, as if... Seth, your number one.
My number one is Anything by Lindsay Ellis. I am a huge, I was a huge early fan and now a ridiculously huge fan that she got me to sign up for Nebula because she's on there and I watch all the other YouTubers that got over there too, like CGP Grey was another one of my favorites. I discovered her with her like original Lord of the Rings series, but like her series on The Hobbit is like a must watch on YouTube. And she's got a new book out recently called Axiom's End. I read it immediately as soon as it came out, and it was just as brilliant as everything else she puts out. The only thing I just can't get into is she's got a podcast on musicals, and I just never really had a thing for musicals, so I started trying to listen to that too because my fandom runs that strong, but I can't get into the musicals podcast. But yeah, Lindsay Ellis, everything she does is pretty awesome.
All right, read your number one.
You know, it's probably one that a lot of people are doing, Red Dead Redemption, although it caused me a moment of looking into my soul when my wife caught me at 3 a.m. making gloves out of animal hides, out of animals that I killed in that game. And I was sitting there, I said, I have to be crafting these gloves to sell them to buy whatever it was. And I was like, this is insane. I'm making gloves out of video game animals that I hunted.
It was important for you to say in the game, because at one point I thought you had actually killed some squirrels and were making gloves.
No, it was way dorkier than that. I was Red Dead Redemption gloves and selling them.
Yeah. My number one is fairly obvious. It is Football Manager. I have managed the footballs because it was over the summer and you didn't know if sports were ever going to happen again and you were real sad. So like, what if you don't have sports? Well, let's go have some pretend sports. Let's become the manager of the U.S. national team just in time for the golden generation of Christian Pulisic and Serginho Dest and all those guys to age out. Let's recruit a really good German-American striker who plays on your club team who you signed up solely so that you could be friends with him so you could recruit him to the United States. Let's have one bad game against Mexico in the Gold Cup and get fired. What is this, Football Manager? Get out of here! Anyway, why should someone employ you, Reed Baker? Reed McCarthy?
Boy, this close to getting through a Reed episode without you screwing up his name or his company. Back from like the end!
So I'm an attorney. I practice in Ann Arbor. I help people with estate planning, long-term care planning, guardianships, powers of attorney, wills, trust, things like that. And, you know, I'm nice to deal with, and I return phone calls, which not all lawyers do. There's a plug.
All right, so if you want to look up Reed McCarthy, Ann Arbor Elder Law, just Google it. He'll come right up, and then you will have whatever you need from an elder law expert.
There you go.
All right.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, no problem.
Appreciate you.
Have a great day tomorrow. Hope we win. Go Blue.
Go Blue. Well, we've reached the end of another podcast. This one may be the dorkiest of all time.
No, there was the one where we did board games with Reed. There was the one where we
talked about Settlers of Catan for 14 minutes last time.
That's right. I think there was a Dungeons and Dragons one we did with Reed.
Dude, normies play Catan. Like, I think we went to a new place.
That's enough.
In this segment. We'll be right back.
Must have.
So 5-5.